because we're a little tight on time, I'm going to go right ahead and introduce Les Carpenter, who was born in the Mackenzie Delta of the Northwest Territories and was raised on the land north of Sachs Harbor on Banks Island. At the age of 6, Les was taken away from home and put into residential school in Inuvik. At 20, he was recruited by the CBC, where he worked as a radio journalist for 6 years. In 1984, the Inuvialuit of the Western Arctic in Canada settled a comprehensive land claim agreement. Within a year, Les became the first elected leader of his people and was tasked with implementing the Inuvialuit Agreement. For 4 years, Les served as a member of the United Nations Special Task Force on Indigenous Peoples. In 2000, Les stepped back into hosting radio and television for the Northern Native Broadcasting, Yukon. And in 2009, he assumed the role of CEO in rebuilding the Native Communication Society of the Northwest Territories.
Thank you. As was said, I'm with the Native Communications in the North, an organization that has been in existence in one form or another since the mid-70s, mostly created at that time to deal with a lot of the flow of information that was being bandied back and forth pre-land claim days and leading up to the pipeline inquiry that took place in the mid-70s. Now, the worst thing about being an Aboriginal organization is realizing just how many problems you encounter that can be avoided by governments simply updating existing policy. Between 2013 and 15, we dropped 66% of our staff and were effectively off the air for about a year. The CBC published a slew of scathing articles about our organization, describing how we'd been given loads of money and not done anything with it. But contrary to their articles, the federal government had pulled the rug out from under us. The funding was not even enough to cover our expenses because it, as we all know, in a lot of cases, was sent too late. And by the time it arrived, we had to pay off all the past debts and the bank as well. Negative press, trust loss in the community, and almost zero profits didn't deter us. We worked hard to regain funding without help from either federal or territorial governments. We reached out to Dennis Bevington, who was then the MP for the Northwest Territories, to raise the issue in a session of Parliament. And he brought our concerns to Ottawa in a statement arguing that Heritage Canada was neglecting its mandate to enhance Aboriginal cultures and languages. Our concerns were only taken seriously after we implored the territorial government to consider their language policy and our importance to delivering on their policies. Despite their efforts, their funding has only been a stopgap, and we're merely treading water, anxiously awaiting federal and territorial governments to realize promises made during elections. And I should point out, too, that the Northwest Territories government is the only jurisdiction in Canada right now that has given official status to Aboriginal languages. That being said, they've done very little to enhance that. And in a lot of cases, some of the MPs who are elected are not even aware that there's a policy that exists. And it wasn't until this year we started recovering from our shutdown, and our organization had been denied funding after it had been promised. And how many times have some of you been there? And we always get the clause too. It's a real stinger. And I quote, "Applicants who incur expenses before their funding has been officially approved by the Department of Heritage do so at their own risk," unquote. We had an instance in 2012 where we applied with our budget and our work plan for the next fiscal year. We submitted that October 2012, we got notification October 2013 that we had been approved for a contribution agreement. The first contribution within that fiscal year didn't come until December 21st, which was 9 months after the start of the fiscal year. And they expect you to, you know, basically cover your ass for the time that they don't, but they also say you cannot spend it on this, this, and this. So it's a situation that exists still today. But unfortunately, I mean, you know, those agreements with governments are the lifeblood of our organization. And we try to supplement our income through advertising, though we're unable to recruit effectively from the Northwest Territories given the lack of available candidates. Plus, we're also in a very small market. And within Yellowknife, you're working with a population that used to be basically a city of miners, you know, and then surrounding the city, you ended up with, you know, five regions that pretty much have become the largest private landowners in the world. So it's a different whole dichotomy that we have to deal with. What was most troubling about those turbulent times was how our government neglected their mandate and, you know, realizing at the same time that we provide airtime for five Aboriginal languages and English on a daily basis. The failure of the Native Communication Society might not have meant the death of Aboriginal languages in the North, but it would have been dealt a significant blow. This presentation addresses the importance Aboriginal broadcasters have in saving their own languages. We have solutions to our own problems. We simply need extra government support at this time. Broadcasters are supposed to be a key stakeholder in the Liberal government's stated objective to save Aboriginal heritage, and yet, time and again, we're not consulted or engaged in our own cultural preservation. To effectively build a strategy around saving Aboriginal languages, Heritage Canada and the CRTC must engage more readily with its stakeholders. Aboriginal broadcasters make up an important part of this group. They disseminate languages and information to an entire territory of culturally vulnerable people. Now, as much as I would like to, this presentation is not meant to point fingers. Aboriginal groups have solutions to their own problems and are always actively searching for forums to discuss these ideas. As it stands, our organization presents an anomaly due to the number of languages we offer. The Native Communication Society of the NWT can be a pilot program to test out various language initiatives. Other stations can copy our examples and reap the benefits of increased cooperation between the CRTC, Heritage Canada, and Aboriginal broadcasters. As recently as May 26th, the federal government delivered $19.6 million, as we heard this morning, for Aboriginal support in the Northwest Territories. And while this may appear to be a victory in the fight to save languages, the federal government stakeholders were not all consulted on how best to shell out that funding. The funding was directed primarily to the territorial government rather than directly to Aboriginal organizations most in need. It is important for the territorial government's involvement, but Aboriginal groups must now apply to receive funding that they're entitled to. It is clear territorial working groups are unable to participate on even basic stakeholder agreements or follow through on their action plans. And as recently as 2015, the Standing Committee on Government Operations was dismayed that two of the NWT's language boards did not have English, French, and Inuktitut representatives. Research shows that Aboriginal languages are dying, and of the 60 Aboriginal languages spoken in Canada, it is being projected that only three are expected to survive I heard this morning of the limited number of speakers in the Bella Coola area. We have one language like that, Gwich'in language, mostly spoken by elders across, you know, three jurisdictions in the Northwest Territories, the Yukon and Alaska. And we're down to about 200 speakers left for that language. Federal funding for Indigenous schools rests at $4 per student, while English and French schools receive around $4,000 per student. And when Aboriginal people learn about their language, they learn more than just about speaking words. They learn about cultural practices which have been stolen from them. One of the primary modes of language immersion is outside the classroom. Northern students must consistently hear, speak, and listen to Aboriginal languages to truly learn it outside of a purely conversational capacity. Dene elders from Sama Kay have noted that language doesn't exist without culture. Language survival is stronger when culture and language are together, and you can't do one without the other. Ottawa must recognize the importance that radio plays in bringing culture into homes. Without funding, Aboriginal radio and Aboriginal culture will not survive. Radio can provide an avenue for older Aboriginal peoples coming to terms with the heritage they may have lost. Funding for radio is more than producing Canadian content. It's a conduit for language survival. Outside the classroom, Aboriginal radio and the declining number of elders are the remaining language teachers. Our greatest challenge isn't to spread awareness. The outpouring of support for campaigns like Idle No More, Pulled Together, the Search for Indigenous Women, and pushback against omnibus legislation by the Harper government has shown that many Canadians are now paying attention. Our greatest challenge now is to influence decision makers. As Aboriginal broadcasters increasingly reach towards self-determination and cooperation, broadcasters need to begin communicating with each other. Aboriginal broadcasters, often struggling for resources, will turn on one another in jealousy or turn to apathy. We need an open forum to discuss cost-saving initiatives, policy concerns, partnerships, and stories. With the initial successes of the Truth and Reconciliation, there's no better time for Aboriginals to engage with one another. Language restoration should be a key component of TRC, a council of Aboriginal broadcasters with federal support would go a long way. Aboriginal broadcasters have important stories to tell Canadians as well. Stories on climate change, northern sovereignty, and circumpolar issues are often neglected because of funding centralization in Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. Though Ottawa has begun to understand the necessity of our organization to saving endangered languages and cultures, it needs to go further. We need Ottawa to recognize that unique differences exist between territorial government centers like Yellowknife and communities like Uluwatu. If funding reflected the realities of northern living rather than on the size of the project or population reached, Aboriginal broadcasters could achieve the CRTC's mandate to support Aboriginal broadcasting. If the CRTC's policy on Aboriginal broadcasters became a working document, Aboriginal broadcasters could have more of a voice in determining policy that would impact and affect them directly. We require more consultation on what kinds of funds we need, more transparency with the funding process, and closer cooperation with building our applications.
He wants to cut you off.
You want to cut me off?
We're 3 minutes past.
Heritage Canada, and this is where it's important too in a lot of the problems we deal with them, they're challenged in many areas. Their staff must be knowledgeable about our geography, our languages, our physical operation, and challenges we face on a regular basis. Unlike organizations in more developed parts of Canada, assumptions cannot continue to be made about our needs. Much like climate change, the cultural, physical, and sociological landscape of the North changes from year to year, and this needs to be reflected in funding agreements. The cost of living in Yellowknife, where half the territory lives, is more expensive to live in than in Toronto's downtown core. We cannot survive on menial funds, nor should we have to, if the Liberal government is really to be believed. Ultimately, the CRTC, in my opinion, should build its own Aboriginal broadcasters arm based on the current group of communication societies, community radio stations, Aboriginal communicators, and those Aboriginals not currently considered by Canada. Too often, broadcasters find themselves placed in a tug of war between federal, territorial, and municipal policy rather than focusing on developing our businesses. Too often, managers spend their time searching for funding opportunities rather than chasing leads and building relationships in communities. Too often, our turnover rates are exponential because employees are tired of being paid low wages for going above and beyond, much like Corey. To ensure these policies are met, the North needs its own commissioner on the CRTC to represent the three territories. Not only will this participation be a good faith showing of the CRTC in its dedication to preserve Aboriginal languages, it also reflects Indigenous participation in the CRTC's regulatory process. Eventually, Aboriginal participation would go beyond the CRTC. Aboriginals need to be on the board of major communications outlets like the CBC to ensure policies are effectively engaging with Aboriginals. Too often we have found ourselves subjected to policies we have not been consulted on, despite the many emails telling us to the contrary. On a more day-to-day level, Aboriginal broadcasters are often hamstrung by waiting on federal strategies, funding, and statements. We no longer can be engaged on a superficial level. As policies are developed to salvage Aboriginal languages, we implore the federal government to discuss how best to implement strategy. Regular communication with stakeholders is not simply effective in this circumstance. It is important for good leadership across the board. Our reliance on government funding has crippled us technologically. Most of our transmitters are significantly outdated, and we're consistently refused federal funding to purchase new ones. The prohibitively inflated cost of northern living means most of our funds go to our properties. Shipping costs to the territories are also incredibly costly, discouraging businesses to aid us. We've recently tried to consolidate our offices to cut down on expenses, but the territorial government has so far ignored assisting us in our attempts to enter into a more cost-friendly real estate arrangement. As we wait on federal funding to accept our funding requests, our transmitters sustain more and more damage, increasing the overall cost year after year. When it comes to equipment, anything that becomes obsolete or redundant to the CBC, or anything that is thrown away, is newer than anything that we currently have. This garbage equipment could sustain us for years. Our organization has the reach to be a significant disaster communication network, thus far the only one in the Northwest Territories. Failing transmitters could be the difference between life and death in the event of a catastrophe. Despite these challenges, our most pressing concern is poor reception to Aboriginal language programming despite federal policy stating otherwise. It's these sorts of problems which continue to plague our relationship with Ottawa, despite significant promises to rebuild our relationship. Much more needs to be done. Promises need to be kept, policies repealed and expanded, and the realities of Aboriginal broadcasters need to be understood on a level beyond skin deep. Heritage Canada and the rest of the federal government must accept that the North is a part of Canada with a uniqueness and challenges unto its own. We must participate in the federal government's attitudes and daily dealings and not be left only when it is convenient for the rest of the country. Moving forward, we expect more engagement for stakeholders. As one who has a wide net to cast, we suggest starting with us. In conclusion, Canada's cultural mosaic cannot be called as such without including its First Peoples. Canada's international reputation has grown substantially under its new Prime Minister, but lasting positive change is the only way for Canadians to have any long-term credibility on the international stage. These changes begin with Aboriginal engagement at the national level. Without Canada's Aboriginals, the world will not accept the nation they believe it to be. Our cultural mosaic will only be skin deep. Aboriginals have fought and fought hard to earn their place in Canadian conversations. And with support, our media, our culture, and our relationships will not only survive but thrive. We will no longer be just a part of the conversation, but a driving force behind genuine positive change for this country we call home. Thank you.